shall set you free.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, everybody. This is Heartbeat Radio, Mr. Bruce Hart's show every Sunday. And right now, no one's called in yet. I just got a message from Jay earlier today, the PWP owner, and he just needed a host for tonight's show. And TLD used to have reviews for a pay-per-view. After a pay-per-view, usually we host it on Sunday. But, you know, then, you know, they gave Bruce Heartbeat Radio and his shows every Sunday. And since his show's been introduced to the PWP radio network, usually when there's a pay-per-view, he just reviews it himself. So, you know, this is his deal. I was hoping for him to call in, but so far no one's called in yet. Looking at the switchboard, and so far no one's called in. So right now what I'm just going to do, I'm just going to basically just cover Payback as well. And if Bruce calls in, I'll take it over to him, and he can handle it because this is his show. I don't want to ruin his parade or anything. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm just going to right now just go through Payback. If you would like to call in and voice your opinion about the show, the call-in number is 760-888-5749. Again, the call-in number is 760-888-5749. Again, this is Toph of PWP Radio, just temporarily doing a stand-in for Mr. Bruce Hart until he comes in. So right now we're just going to go over Payback and just discuss the card from beginning to end. And, you know, after that's over, I'll give you my overall opinion of the show. First and foremost, it was in Chicago tonight, and, you know, that just means a lot of fans are going to be chanting CM Punk, and that was definitely addressed later in the show, and we'll get to that. First things first, though, let's discuss this pre-show match. We had El Torito against Hornswoggle in a mask versus hair match. I said previously on PWP Radio that El Torito's real name is currently unknown. No one knows his real name. It's because of the heritage of, you know, mask wrestlers and stuff. So I already knew automatically there's no way he's losing the match. So Hornswoggle and El Torito put on a reasonable match. And actually, I think I see a caller in right now. This might be Bruce. Area code 403, is this you, Mr. Hart?
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine. This is Toph. Do you want me to call you Bruce or Mr. Hart? Whichever is good for you, sir.
Oh, Bruce is fine. It's cool.
Okay, hey, Bruce. Well, this is your show, so I don't want to, like, take over. How do you normally do things on Sunday?
I usually sort of let you or whoever's the so-called host kind of be the moderator or, you know, the intermediary and just kind of ask questions and kind of direct the traffic, and I prefer to be just sort of treated more like sort of like one of the so-called panelists or whatever. So
okay,
so that's fine. You can kind of just kind of bring up things. There's callers coming in, kind of ask them what they have on their mind, and also feel free to interject your own perspectives anytime, you know, whatever you feel like saying or adding or commenting on is fine too.
Okay. Well, since Payback was tonight, I just figured we can just go over the show. Were you able to watch it tonight?
Yeah, I was able to watch it, so I can certainly offer perspective on it.
Okay. Well, what we'll do is we'll just go over the matches one by one, and you can just give us your illustrious opinion on each one. I know you know a lot about the business. So
the pre-show match was
El Torito against Hornswoggle in a old-school mask versus hair match. You know, a lot of fans really aren't feeling, you know, this, you know, kind of this whole minis thing. I remember when I was much younger, when I was a child, I remember WWF doing this vaguely around 97, 98. Sometimes I remember they kind of called in people from different countries to just sort of do it, but they just kind of been using Hornswoggle and El Torito constantly. I think that's the main reason fans are just sort of like not really into it. I think if they called in more guys for Hornswoggle and Torito to work with, fans wouldn't be so sour on it. But at the same time, there seem to be a good amount of fans that are enjoying it as well. It was a mask versus hair match, and I really didn't get a chance to watch it. I saw bits and pieces and stuff. What
no,
I do know is that El Torito.
As far as I know, it wasn't even on the main card. It was a pre-match, you know, pre-show, I think, throwaway match, maybe to warm up, more to warm up just the house crowd a bit, you know. And I saw the end of it where they had Hornswoggle get his head shaved or something like that. And I guess it was all right. I think that was one of the detractive elements of the show. You know, it's just that there was a few matches that didn't look like they really belonged on the show. They were just sort of there to fill it out, you know, and some of them didn't look like they had any, you know, didn't even look like they warranted being on a major pay-per-view. But I thought it was all right. The Hornswoggle, El Dorito or whatever the hell it was, you know. And
it's on mute, on speaker.
Definitely okay, and to the listeners out there, they gave El Torito a little smaller tail attached to his outfit, you know, because his longer tail was torn off in some previous show, I can't recall, but El Torito, he won, and Hornswoggle got his head shaved, and, you know, that was the pre-show match, and the pre-show match is just there to get the crowd excited and whatever. So moving on to the actual main show itself, the actual pay-per-view, the very first match was Sheamus defending his United States Championship against Cesaro, and, you know, Sheamus came out, and Paul Heyman came out first. And when he came out first, of course, you know, the fans were chanting CM Punk, CM Punk, CM Punk, and then Paul Heyman very brilliantly said that, yes, CM Punk is in the other arena watching the Blackhawks lose, and, of course, the fans didn't like that. This wouldn't be the first time CM Punk fans were owned, as it would happen again later in the show, which we'll get to. But the first match was Sheamus versus Cesaro. It was a decent opener, very physical, as you can imagine.
I was more intrigued that they got two non-Americans, you know, vying for the U.S. title. It's almost funny because
you noticed that too, didn't you?
Yeah, they got a predomination of American guys in there, but for some reason they have an Irishman and whatever Cesaro is. Some European, whatever, vying for the U.S. title, which to me kind of took something off. I think like having the damned Sweden and Czechoslovakia playing for the Stanley Cup or some damn thing, you know. But I thought it was all right. I didn't think it was a great match. It wasn't enough wrestling to set up the power moves in the high spots, but it wasn't bad. You know, I don't think either one of them's a classical ring practitioner, you know, so it was about as good as I could expect out of those two. Cesaro does some nice power moves. I thought that was a nice spot off the top rope. It looked, you know, it's got impressive strength, you know. He seems to use it, like, as opposed to maybe some of these. I've seen some muscle heads that are in there that are strong but not wrestling strong. So Cesaro seems to have a good ability to apply his strength to wrestling, which is different than, say, some of the Ted Arcidi type guys who weren't so proficient. But it was all right. It was about what you might have expected out of it, you know. Wasn't any tear the house down or anything like that, but thankfully it didn't stink the joint out either, which is something it was capable of on paper. So I thought it was all right, you know, not anything more than that. But what was your perspective on it?
I thought the match was okay. It was decent. I think the match could have been better if they just allowed Cesaro to stay babyface at the WrestleMania. But as a heel, he's got to do things to slow down the match and, you know, invoke, you know, heat reactions from the fans. The match was okay. Maybe if he had gone a few more minutes longer, it could have definitely been better. To the finish, for the fans out there, the finish was basically Cesaro was finally able to to hit the swing on Sheamus, and after the swing, he swinged Sheamus around 15 or 16 times, and then he picked him up and was going for the neutralizer, and then Sheamus he hit him with the small package, which is an old school move in wrestling where, you know, it seems like the babyface is doomed, and then hits a small package, 1, 2, 3, and that's how Sheamus retained. Definitely out of the norm finish for Sheamus. You know, Sheamus is typically booked as a very powerful, dominant babyface, almost always wins with the bro kick, occasionally the white noise, sometimes the Irish cloverleaf, or also known as the Texas cloverleaf. So he got a small package from Cesaro. So the way they kind of told the win, the way I saw it, it was sort of like, okay, this feud isn't over. There'll be another match down the road, and I'm sure there will be. So, but the match was okay. It was definitely a decent opener. I think that was probably the best match they
Yeah, it was about. I don't think they could have expected any more out of either one of them. You know, they, to their credit, both worked hard and didn't mail it in, which sometimes you see in the prelims. So, I thought it was all right. It wasn't
awe-inspiring
or anything, but just, you know, it got to serve the purpose, I guess, that it was supposed to serve. So.
Mm-hmm. All right, this brings us to our next match. And this was an impromptu tag team match that they added. I know a lot of fans are not too crazy when this happens because, you know, it's a pay-per-view. And when you have a pay-per-view, you pay money to see said matches. And so, like, when matches are added at the last minute, really it just kind of comes off as, okay, we don't have enough matches. Let's just put something on here to kill time. It kind of comes off as filler to a lot of fans. And WWE does this sometimes, and I kind of figured they did because they didn't have too many matches going in the card. But the next match was it was the Rhodes Brothers, also known as the Brotherhood, Cody Rhodes and Goldust, against Curtis Axel and Ryback. This was actually a decent tag team match. I'm a big fan of tag team wrestling, and before this match started, they showed a little backstage segment where, this was the same city, Chicago, where, you know, the Rhodes Brothers reunited and became the Brotherhood when they got their job back. And so Cody was basically saying, tonight, we're going to get back on the same track. And so they went out there, had a decent tag team match, and there was actually some pretty close near falls. But what happens in the end, though, is Cody goes for his patented disaster kick, the little second rope assisted kick, but then Ryback sort of caught him in midair, hit the shell shock, 1, 2, 3, so Ryback wins. And then when the match is over, Cody gets the microphone and basically tells Goldust that as his brother, he should find another tag team partner, and then walks away. Basically, Cody was just saying he doesn't think he's good enough to be Goldust's tag team partner. The story that they've been telling on WWE television is, for weeks now, the Rhodes Brothers, or the Brotherhood, or whatever you want to call them, they go out there, they have decent tag matches, but in the end they lose, and consistently it's always Cody that takes the pin. So at first I thought that the story they were going to tell was like, you know, maybe a disgruntled younger brother kind of turns heel, like, you know, you being a heart, Bruce, I figured, you know, this story is something you might relate to. I thought they were going to maybe go the Owen Brett route, but it looks like they're going the Cody's lost his self-esteem, doesn't think he's good enough story. I mean, I'm very curious to know how you feel about this, because I know when it comes to brothers being tag team, you know, wrestlers, this is definitely an area of your topic. What do you think about, Bruce?
I thought it was kind of lame myself. There wasn't enough to it to justify, you know, them having a little falling out, or the demise. Like, at the very least, you know, if they're gonna do something like that, they should have had the finish, you know, kind of set something up, or maybe Goldust is doing something to help Cody and it backfires, or vice versa. You know, there wasn't any, for me, you know, there was nothing to justify them having a falling out at the end, you know. All that basically happened is Cody got pinned in the middle, you know, wasn't due to Goldust, wasn't due to some kind of questionable circumstance of a quasi-misunderstanding or something. So for that, I found it kind of lame, and sure, if they're now, I assume they're planning on inflicting some kind of a feud on us, like maybe what Bret and Owen did back in the day, but I'm not sure that there's any great appetite for that. You know, there's not enough issues, there's not enough attached to it that's going to really, I got to see Cody and Goldust settle their differences. You know, then I imagine they'll fan the flames a bit or whatever, but I don't know, the whole thing's kind of a bit weak for me because it wasn't that long ago that Cody was a heel anyway doing that, you know, crap about good grooming and pulling nose hairs out of your hair and all that other. And Goldust is sort of just resurfaced, you know, as his androgynous persona or whatever. But for me, the whole thing was kind of not very well packaged in the first place, you know. You know, I hope, you know, they're both decent guys, Cody and Dustin, so I hope, you know, they kind of rise above the half-assed scripting that was inflicted on them, and not sure if they were the ones who perpetrated it or their dad or some of the geniuses in the back there, but it certainly didn't make a hell of a lot of sense. And it was kind of like you said, the whole match was kind of, even from the get-go, a bit of a, you know, kind of one of those last-minute add-ons that didn't, there was no heat between any of them. Last time, however many months, the Ryback and Curtis have mostly been getting squashed by the Shield in those 10-against-3 matches and all that kind of stuff. So they're not, like, really, setting the world on fire either. So the whole thing didn't make a hell of a lot of sense. You know, I don't know what they're planning to salvage out of it. Maybe Cody and Goldust feuding, but generally, when you have a switch, you build something up, and you got like even when they did Bret and Owen back in the day, there was a fair bit attached to it, and Bret was a champion, and Owen was in a position get some heat and all, but this didn't really leave me with any great, I got to see to offer something. So hopefully they got something there, although at this point I don't, you know, chomping at the bit to see Goldust and Cody headline SummerSlam or something like that, you know, so see what happens.
Yeah, I've been very adamant about this Cody Goldust thing for some time. About a year ago, I went on a massive rant about it on the regular PWP radio show, and I thought that the best time to pull the trigger for this Cody Goldust thing, I'm not sure if you remember or how long you've been keeping up with today's product, but towards the tail end of 2011, you know, Cody, well, how should I say this? Let's start from the beginning. Cody had the dashing Cody Rhodes gimmick that you just talked about earlier, you know, where he was a pretty boy, you need to brush your teeth and floss and stuff. Then at the very beginning of 2011, you know, he had that match with Rey Mysterio. They did the whole knee brace angle where he damaged his face, and then he started wearing a mask, and everyone called him deranged Cody Rhodes. And I actually liked the transition because the character of dashing Cody Rhodes was such a vain, selfish, egotistical character, but, like, all he cared about was his good looks, and the storyline, he lost his good looks and became like a deranged figured person that was bitter. It was almost like a comic book villain, and he had a really good match against Rey Mysterio at WrestleMania 20.
Feeble takeover.
Right, and he won that match. Right. And then for a brief time, he was back with Ted DiBiase, and they kind of did their thing during the summer, and when he beat people, he put paper bags over their head. He eventually became Intercontinental Champion. Down the road, he dropped the mask, started wearing knee braces, and was kind of like a hybrid of dashing Cody Rhodes with every every now and then, sort of keeping the deranged thing going on. He brought back the original Intercontinental Championship, and I remember he was very over. I remember Survivor Series, it was like Team Barrett against Team Orton, and eventually Barrett and Rose were the sole survivors. And to sort of end this rant, what basically happened was, if you remembered, around this time Booker T came back, and now Booker T had a series of matches with Cody, and eventually Dustin Reynolds, not Goldust, Dustin Reynolds, he came back and basically was trying to tell Cody, hey, you know, Booker's my friend, you know, stop bullying him, blah, blah, blah. And basically Cody disowned him and was like, you know, I never saw you as a brother. I'm better than you, blah, blah, blah. And it was getting heat reactions and stuff. And at this point, Cody had been Intercontinental Champion for quite some time, over half a year. And he needed that breakout star match to really just solidify him as, like, you know, that next big dude. And I thought that a career versus title match against Goldust at WrestleMania 28 would have been the direction to go. And it seemed like that was the direction they were going to go, but they didn't pull the trigger. It was just a one-time appearance. You know, Dustin Reynolds showed up, and then Cody basically told him to leave, and then he was gone. And then Cody beat Booker T, and then that was the end of it. And so then Cody just drifted, and then he just had some filler feud with Big Show, and then Big Show beat him for the title at WrestleMania, and then that was the end of it. And Cody's just been struggling ever since. He did the little, you know, scholar thing with Damian Sandow. And, you know, I mean, when he got back with Goldust last year, that was great. He had some great matches with the Shield. But, you know, what I'm trying to say, like, if they want to do Goldust versus Cody, I felt like the boat for that has sailed. You know what I'm saying? Like, the best time they could have did it.
I think at the very least, you know, you take advantage of what you have at your disposal. At the very least, I would have brought Dusty in to kind of maybe, you know, be the intermediary if they were going to have their little, you know, brother spat at the end, have old Dusty come out and maybe try to, and maybe something evolve from there, so you at least have some, you know, Dusty trying to keep them apart, or maybe if Cody's turning heel, Cody belts Dusty, and or something like that. Yeah, there, for me, it was kind of flat, you know, taking into consideration all the dynamics you already mentioned, and then the finish didn't really... There was nothing attached to it that, you know, frankly, had any justification whatsoever for Cody being pissed at Goldust. You know, would have been better. It would have been different if maybe Goldust trying to come to Cody's rescue and accidentally hit Cody, or they had one of those drop down double knockout spots and Goldust inadvertently caused Cody to lose or something like that. That would have at least sort of, you know, given some justification. But for me, the whole thing was flat. Cody just got beat right in the middle, you know, not much more to it. And then he's on Goldust's case. There was nothing earlier in the match to kind of set it up. For me, the whole thing is flat. And then I imagine they'll dredge it and try to revive it through interviews tomorrow on Raw or whatever the hell the usual stuff they do. But at this point, you know, I don't even know whether they're planning on having them feud or whether they've just sort of, you know, as a rule, when you're doing a swerve or a switch, the rule of thumb is those people should be on a high level. You know, you don't have guys switching and double-crossing each other when they're in undercard, you know, mired in the prelims, as they say, you know. And that's pretty well what, at this point, the Goldust and Cody aren't like setting the world on fire. They're not the preeminent hot tag team or everything, like, you know. So it doesn't mean a hell of a lot when you got to, you know, if, like right now you had Kofi and R-Truth had a falling out or something. Most people would be saying, big deal, you know, all they've been doing is getting beat. Or if you had Curtis and, you know, Ryback, you know, going at each other at the end of the match. They wouldn't really grab anyone because neither one of them's been doing much for the last little while, you know. So to me, it didn't serve any great purpose. It's almost reflective of the, you know, the booking kind of doldrums that are down there right now, it seems. You know, there's not a lot of so-called method to the madness.
Yeah, I definitely agree. All right, so let's move on to our next match, which was Rusev, no longer Alexander Rusev. Rusev against Big E, no longer Big E Langston. WWE loves to change names. So Rusev against Big E, and this match was pretty short. It was pretty, I thought it was going to go a little bit longer. Pretty much the spot of this match was where Big E, Rusev was on the ring apron, getting ready to get back in the ring, and then Big E just sort of launched himself like a missile, speared him, and went through the middle ropes.
That was a nice-looking spot. You know, it was actually pretty, quite impressed, you know, because it was pretty high risk and well executed. I was kind of half blown away with that because I wouldn't expect that out of either one of those guys, you know, and seemed to execute it pretty well. And other than that, the match was, you know, nothing to write home about. But that one spot was kind of highlight of the night material. And to their credit, that was another match that, you know, didn't seem like, I'm almost amused with their trying to re-dredge up some of this. The old, remind me of the old Nikolai Volkov, Iron Sheik, you know, era, you know, where they were, even to the fact that Rusev's using the Iron Sheik's camel clutch as his finish, you know, so it was about what I expected. I don't think you expect much more. I'm not sure if they're planning on giving Rusev the big push now. Seems like a little kind of, I guess they're trying to play on if there is any major heat going on with the United States and Russia. You know, I think they're trying to flog, you know, the anti-Putin and all like that. I noticed they seem to be pushing Rusev now. First he was Bulgarian, now he's Russian or something like that. It's kind of amusing how they alter things on the fly, you know. But it was okay. I don't see too much, you know, great box office in Rusev, you know. Maybe they'll dredge up some American hero and have him destroy the Russian bear or some such thing, you know. But
oh, no worries. No worries. He'll be fed to Cena eventually at some point. But
yeah
this match was
Cena will be you know, Stars and Stripes forever, and Rusev will go back to anonymity after that. You know, I don't see him having too long of a career. He doesn't seem like he's got enough dimension to him to really sustain a long run. You know, I anticipate he'll become, if he does even stick around, more like a Nikolai Volkov, kind of a Colonel Klinkish type, you know, one of those Hogan's Heroes type, buffoonish, heelish types, you know, after that, you know. But I think the one that gets the most heat in that is his manageress. Seems like she's doesn't do a bad job, stays within her role, doesn't try to get too more than that, which is to her credit, you know. But hopefully, I anticipate they'll maybe turn her into a diva or something soon, you know, like AJ or seems like all the divas, the manageresses have evolved into marginally talented, lukewarm divas in the last few years, you know. But I don't know whether that's their intent there or not, but she actually doesn't do her role too bad, this playing kind of like some kind of a, reminds me of one of those kind of vampy evil bitches in the James Bond movies or something, you know. But she'll do a bad job, though, you know. Thus far, thankfully, they haven't had her giving low blows to guys or, you know, getting involved in anything but a verbal way, you know. So that's kind of refreshing. They just let her play her role and keep her within that, you know. But yeah, there wasn't much more to write home about that match, I guess, you know. At one spot, the spear was the Big E and through the ropes. That was as good a spot as I've seen either one of those guys do, and exceeded my expectations.
Yeah, the match was it was very short, and it was what it was. And story he told was when Big E hit the spear on Rusev to the outside. Big E hurt his arm, and then there was another spot where Rusev gave him a very stiff kick to the face, and Big E never really recovered from that. And soon after that, he put him away with the camel clutch. So yeah, Rusev wins, and we'll see what they do with that particular angle if they choose to continue it at all. But it was definitely the most offense anyone has ever gotten in on Rusev so far. But we'll see what's going on. All right, this brings us to our next match, and again, more impromptu filler stuff added at the very last minute. Bo Dallas versus Kofi Kingston, and basically before the match even starts, King comes out for no reason, destroys Kofi Kingston for no reason, and then Bo Dallas just kind of stands over Kofi's body, and he's like, Kofi, you can get better. All you got to do is believe, and that was pretty much the end of the segment. Bo Dallas is pretty much, he's hit or miss. Everyone I've talked to, they either think he's hilarious or they're like, get this fucker off my TV. So there is no marginal middle line for Bo Dallas. Everyone I talk to, they either love this guy and they think he's a parody of John Cena, or they just don't get it. Did you care about this segment, and what's your opinion of Bo Dallas?
I'm still not sure what the hell they're trying to inflict on us there, you know. The whole thing doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I think they're he reminds me sort of like a latter day version of the Honky Tonk Man or something like that. But the hopefully they have a better sense of than it appears. Like right now, I don't know whether they're supposed to hate him or like him, or you know, think he's a comic relief, or like the whole thing seems like it's kind of skewed or doesn't have any you know, direction itself. And the match itself, you know, it's sort of almost in its own, you know, ass backward way summed up a lot of what's wrong with the booking in WWE. But like, Kane had no business, there was nothing, no reason whatsoever for him to be out there that I could see. I'm not sure what, like, you're supposed to be having Kofi and Bo Dallas, and then all of a sudden Kane is coming out there. The referee is doing nothing about it. Kane destroys Kofi, and then like the whole thing made no sense. There's no perceptible rationale to it. And then at the end, Bo Dallas comes out and makes out to be kind of, you know, he didn't look the least bit sincere, you know, but makes out like Kofi didn't look like he was that messed up either, that there was any need to have a big, you know, sympathy stretcher job either. It was, the whole thing was kind of, you know, flawed in so many ways. You know, I guess the best thing I could say is if that whole charade had not been on the card tonight, I don't think anyone would have been the worse off for it. You know, it's just another, you know, it may have well been on the pre-card with Hornswoggle and El Burrito or whatever the hell it would have, you know, fit in about that, you know, maybe, you know, followed that or preceded it. It was about, you know, so I'm not sure what I'm supposed to take from that match, whether I'm supposed to be up in arms about Kane beating up poor Kofi, or whether I'm supposed to hate Bo Dallas for having done absolutely no wrestling, you know, inflicting the usual babble about Bo Leave and whatever the hell before and after. So the whole thing was kind of like, you know, too many script writers with too much time on their hands and being allowed to inflict too much bullshit on the public. You know? So I don't know what else to say about that. You know, I'm not sure. I'm not going to be going out and buying myself a Bo Dallas T-shirt tomorrow, or I'm not going to be losing any sleep about Kofi, or gnashing my teeth about the big red monster doing something heinous or whatever. You know, I'm not sure where we go from there with any of that. You know. But.
Yeah. Let me see what was next on the show. Next was Bad News Barrett against RVD defending the Intercontinental Championship. And what I liked the most about this match was the crowd interaction. There was a lot of RVD chants and a lot of B&B. So Bad News Barrett, despite the fact that he's a heel, he's actually getting a lot of babyface reactions. You know, it took Wade Barrett quite some time to recover from that whole thing with the Nexus. He never really recovered from that. He was drifting ever since then. Changed his gimmick and his theme song several times, and multiple time Intercontinental Champion, and no matter what he did, he just couldn't connect with the fans. But it looks like this Bad News gimmick is finally getting him over. I think this is finally the gimmick. What I'm basically saying is sometimes it just takes a while for some wrestlers to recover from certain backfalls, and I think that, you know, 4 years later after the Nexus, Wade Barrett is finally recovering, and if he's going to be a main eventer, it's going to be with this gimmick. So if he doesn't make it with this gimmick, he won't make it at all. This match was okay. It was decent.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. My perception from a working angle story or whatever, I thought there was too damn many high spots and not enough wrestling, but that's... That's just from my perspective, but I thought it was a decent match. A few too many false finishes, you know, to the point where you almost become kind of desensitized, you know, 1-2 kick out, 1-2 kick out, 1-2 kick out. By the time they finally had the finish, I was almost kind of, almost like weary, like bad sex or something like that. Okay, let's get it over with, you know. But yeah, I agree with what you're saying about Wade Barrett too. I think they're still fine-tuning that character too. I find some of the bad news, like for me, the bad news thing. It's not a great fit, you know. They already had Bad News Allen up here, you know, who was they called him Bad News Brown down there. But so by that token, you know, I figured they could have come up with, you know, if they were going to give Wade the push, no need to copy something that was kind of semi lukewarm in the WWE anyway. But I'm not a huge fan of all that bad news babble about I've got some bad news, you know. Most time, it doesn't elicit any great heat, if you know what I mean. Like, there's not any, you know, he may as well cut to the nerve. He's going to say something bad news, you know, offend some people or say something that, elicits a legitimate reaction. But I think he's got, he seems like he's pretty conscientious, Wade, and he's trying to get over, you know, and, hopefully, you know, they maybe let him have a little bit of a run, you know. I agree with what you're saying, that some of the previous incarnations and that Nexus and all that other stuff, you know, they're the ones, the people that are orchestrating that should be chastised for that, because they seem to be, constantly giving guy a certain persona, like Damian Sandow's example. Now he's been reduced to Davy Crockett and all this other nonsense tour. You know, they push these guys and then they and Ryback and Curtis Axel and you know, I'm not sure what that says about their creative acumen or what, but even with the Wade Barrett now, he's gone sort of from the you know, the kingpin of Nexus or that whole thing to where he's now Bad News Barrett or whatever. But hopefully they'll stay the course with him and let him, you know, kind of manifest whatever persona he's seeking to, you know, become. And big problem I see down there is all too often they, you know, they seem to go in a direction and they, next thing you know, they're, you know, all suddenly turning, going in a totally different direction. You know, even with, like, we were talking earlier about Cody Rhodes, and they have him doing this, and then and he's suddenly a totally different persona, and I think that's confusing for the fans, and it's tough for these poor bastard wrestlers to rise above some of the creative, you know, incompetence. But hopefully Barrett might, I think he's got some personality or whatever. And, you know, I think he's trying hard. I'd like to see them give him a little bit of an opportunity to take the ball and run with it, as they say.
All right, we got some callers. Area code 917. Welcome to PWP Radio.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me. This is Bobby Vellante calling. One of Bruce's students here at Hart Brothers University, and actually then the scholarship winner from the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Scholarship hosted, ran by HBU. And the question I wanted to ask is for Bruce. And Bruce, the John Cena match, you know, the last man standing match, the final battle, supposed final battle between Bray Wyatt and John Cena. I just wanted to hear your take about it. You know, to me, it kind of seemed too much that you're supposed to be a last man standing between the two guys, yet you had both, you had all members of the Wyatt family in the match, and you had the Uso brothers there as well. It just seems like it, if you're going to do all that, might as well have just made it a six-man tag. I mean,
I tend to agree. You know, if there's, I'm not sure, that seems to be common in the WWE these days all too often, but if you're going to have a single, you know, it's just Bray and Cena, then I think they should, I don't know why the hell they have need to have the Russos and Rowan and Harper out there, you know, pretty much, you know, it pretty well just resembled the damn six-man tag. For one stretch in that match, there was about 10 minutes where all I saw was Rowan and Harper and the Usos, and I was like, where's Cena and Bray Wyatt? Were they out having a smoke or using, you know, having a washroom break or what? They weren't even in, you know, in vicinity of the ring. So, but yeah, I thought, frankly, they were a bit too cute on the finish. I don't know, like, they have this last man standing thing, and then they, you know, I'm not sure why the hell they have all those props out there anyway, like a big box that's just conveniently there for Bray Wyatt to put, Cena to put Bray Wyatt through, and then another big box that he pushes on top of it, so Bray Wyatt can't stand up because he's trapped in this, you know, clutter or whatever, you know. But, I don't know. I didn't have any great vibe about, you know, but the best thing I can say is that they didn't at least have the lights go out and the sheep head come on, and maybe John Cena was wearing a sheep head and was, you know, exercised or some bullshit, you know. So at least it was, you know, not metaphysical, you know. But I thought they tried hard, you know. I didn't, match didn't really light my fire or whatever the hell, you know, it's all right, but I'm not sure, you know, how much farther that whole charade can go without starting to, strain believability, and not sure where they're planning, if they're hopefully not, you know, planning on taking it for another year or two, you know, it seems like it's doesn't have that many, for me, it doesn't have that much left to entice the fans with, you know, but be interested to see, you know, what are you guys' take on that whole thing?
Well, I figure we would get to that later on as we go through the card. We're almost there. Hey, Bobby, would you like to stay on the line to review the rest of the show, or...
Well, yeah, if you like, if it's all right, Bruce, I'd be glad to stay on the rest of the show with you guys.
Yeah, whatever.
All right, cool.
Just see how it unfolds here.
All right, I'll be sure to bring you back later. All right, we got another caller. This is 410. I believe this is Tech from Under the Mat Radio. Hey, Tech, what's going on, man?
Hey, how you doing, man? How you doing, Mr. Bruce Hart? How you doing?
Good. Nice to hear from you, man.
Good hearing from you.
Shaking?
Hanging out. This guy was watching the pay-per-view and I guess post-game show or fallout of the pay-per-view or a monthly special, I guess what they call it now. Bruce, I wanted to ask, if I can call you Bruce and Mr. Bruce.
Yeah,
I wanted to ask your opinion on how Rusev is being used. A lot of talk is being on, you know, him being a Russian and being a Bulgarian and going against South African American wrestlers and going against the lower card wrestlers. How do you feel? Do you feel that he's being used correctly by WWE, or would you do something different as far as booking him as like a monster heel?
I think it's fine to do the. In fact, I think they perhaps should have been doing more of that kind of thing subtly, you know, subtly, and look like it's not by design, where they're parlaying ethnic rivalries. So maybe there's a little bit of added heat on Putin these days with the charade going on in, the Ukraine and all that stuff over there, you know, and that. But for me, at this point, Rusev doesn't have enough personality, or he needs to be more defined. You know, tonight was the first time I really discerned that his finish is maybe the camel clutch, which is sort of a retro, you know, Iron Sheik stuff, you know, whatever the hell. But at this point, he doesn't do enough. You almost got to be a bit more over the top with the, you may as well, if they're going to go retro and do all the cliche stuff, which they seem like they're trying to do, they may as well have him singing the Russian national anthem. And like I said before, define him as, you know, first they had him as a damn Bulgarian, now a Russian. Hopefully they won't be, you know, if...
Yugoslavian.
Maybe, yeah, if they, you know, some Yugoslavian does something where he's now Croatian or, you know, Bosnian or Serbian or, you know, maybe some Chechnyan terrorists blow up an embassy or something, and he's now Chechnyan or some bullshit, you know. But I don't know. The thing that I think he looks too one-dimensional. I don't know that he's got enough ability to, take anything to the next level, you know. To me, it doesn't look like he knows how to bump that well, you know, which is something... most of those heels need to be able to take some bumps and fly for, say, a Cena or some of those guys, you know. And I think the girl, she's doing not a bad role of, it's a little cliche-ish, or, you know, it's kind of,
Rocky Four.
Yeah, for her, the manager or, you know, whatever. I don't even know what her name is, but I think she's doing it all right. Yeah. You know, sort of like a evil version of Elizabeth or something like that, you know, or Sable or something. But I don't know. I don't at this point, I don't see, you know, him being much more than where he is now. You know, I can't, like, see him headlining WrestleMania next. You know, I might be wrong, but unless he does something really that, you know, personifies evil or something, I'm not sure if he's got enough, you know, dynamics to him that he could be, you know, any more than, you know, I my anticipation is he's going to go about the same route as a bunch of these, you know, heels that have been given a moderate push in the last year, and then they seem to fade to black, like, you know, Damian Santos and Rybacks and, you know, even Alberto, you know, a bunch of them that were given, you know, not bad
right.
pushes. Now they seem to have faded to, you know, kind of oblivion in the last few months, you know. So I don't know. He hasn't really given me any great vibe, but I guess, you know, the next step for him, he has to do something pretty, pretty heinous, maybe cripple or do something, you know, where really people are like, whoa, you know, you actually got to go out and do something. Like back in the day, I remember when they were grooming Bundy for Hogan, you know, they, you know, it's all symbolic, but he destroyed St. Jones in like 20 seconds or something, and, you know, he almost needed to have Rusev. If it was me doing that, I would have maybe had Rusev, you know, destroying guys in record time and looking like some kind of, you know, a sinister wrecking machine and all like that, you know, and not showing him enough in the ring that you can see that he can't work. You know, it's, anytime you got those one-dimensional guys like that, you want to keep them to about 2 or 3 minutes or less, so
right.
people can't really recognize all their inadequacies, you know. But if you let them go 10-15 minutes, you know, all the warts and imperfections are, you know, kind of, you know, become quite evident, and there's not much mystique left, you know. So they have to be careful with him, because unless I'm wrong, he doesn't look like he's the second coming of the Dynamite Kid or anything like that to me.
Nah,
you know?
Won't be seeing him, so, you know, flying headbutts or ribs.
But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see him maybe, you know, replacing the Godfather or maybe Santino Marella 6 months from now. He may have evolved into, you know, Davy Crockett or Daniel Boone or something like that.
Sure. Like I said, thank you for your time, Mr. Broussard. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate your perspectives. You had some good points. I enjoyed hearing insightful, enlightened perspectives, so I appreciate your call.
Yeah, well, I do appreciate it. Like I said, Toph, thanks a lot, man. You know, you support me on my show, and I got to support y'all, so.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Anytime.
Thank you. So, yeah, have a good night, and I'll be listening through the rest of the night.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, no problem.
All right, thanks again. Okay, earlier, as we get back on the pay-per-view itself, we were just talking about the Intercontinental Championship match, and Wade Barrett wins. I never said the finishing spot. The finishing spot was eventually he was able to hit him with the hammer. He did hit him with the bullhammer outside, but he missed and hit the ring post. And so he hurt his arm, but eventually he was able to hit RVD and pin him 1-2-3. So you're still your Intercontinental Champion, Bat News Barrett. This takes us to our Daniel Bryan segment. To those of you that are not following or keeping up to score, the general story was that going into the pay-per-view, Daniel Bryan had to make a decision. He had to forfeit the title to Steph McMahon or risk Brie Bella getting fired. And so Stephanie comes out, you know, she's getting nuclear heat. Daniel Bryan comes out with Brie Bella. You know, they go back and forth for a while. And here's the part where Stephanie McMahon just totally owned and just destroyed the Chicago crowd. They never really recovered from this. So as they're talking about Daniel Bryan forfeiting, the fans are chanting CM Punk, CM Punk, CM Punk. And then Steph McMahon says, the fans want you to quit just like he did. And they just shut up entirely. I thought that was hilarious. They've never recovered from this. Chicago, some of the smartest, smarkiest fans anywhere in the entire country, and no matter what a heel says, they're usually able to come back with a comeback. But they couldn't come back from that because Stephanie told the truth. Punk quit, and they shut up. They did not recover from that. They were pretty much quiet as far as, like, smarky stuff is concerned. And so basically what happens in the end is Brie Bella, she decides to quit, because if she quits, then that means that Stephanie McMahon cannot fire her. And then she calls Stephanie McMahon a bitch, and then Brie Bella slaps Stephanie in the face. And so then Stephanie leaves, and then Brie and Brian do the yes chant, and the crowd of yes is with them. And it was a good segment. It was a good segment, and there you go. Pretty much nothing was really decided here, so Brian's still champion, and there you go. I guess whatever fallback they'll do will be tomorrow on Raw, or should I say tonight, since it's basically midnight anyway. So anyway, Bruce, did you have any opinions about this particular segment?
I was mixed about it. I agree with what you're saying about the CM Punk kind of I don't know if that was good or bad. It sort of neutralized it, or it just kind of defused the whole thing, which was, I didn't think it was necessarily good. I thought one of the problems, and it seems to be, all too often the case with Stephanie, tends to these things tend to go on way too long, you know, and it seemed like they were in there for 10 minutes before they even got around to addressing the prevailing issue, which was whether Daniel was going to surrender the belt or Brie was going to get fired. Like, for me, it went on and on and on, and then but I thought I actually thought Brie did a better job than I was expecting, and I thought, all things considered, they all played their roles reasonably well. Actually, I don't think it at this point means a whole hell of a lot. Maybe Brie might be pregnant or something. Anyway, you never know what the hell is going on there. But if they were going to, for me, if just from a booking perspective, and I don't know if there's any intent or they're even able to, you know, kind of go in that direction, but I try to milk it as much as I can and have Brie kind of looking like this, you know, kind of poor victim who's had her career, you know, kind of scuttled or stifled by this evil bitch and blah, blah, blah. But at some point, I think if they were able to, and they should be able to, conjure up some pretext for something to evolve, I could see an interesting match, say at SummerSlam, with Stephanie against Brie Bella in an actual, some kind of a stipulation match or whatever the hell, you know. It might have some legs to it, you know. I have no idea whether Stephanie can work, but it doesn't really matter that much. Like, Vinny, you know, wasn't a prototypical worker when he worked with Brett. He still got, you know, some mileage out of it. So, you know, if they're going to salvage something, I'd go that route. You know, I'm not sure where they're planning on going now with it. You know, that now it's Brie's quit, and you know, Daniel's still injured, so it didn't really resolve the issue at hand. You know, what are they going to do with the belt? Like, is Daniel going to be having a neck brace or whatever for 6 months? Or they're going to, you know, put the belt in mothballs for the time being? Or so those are some of the things that should be answered or whatever, because they've kind of made all this song and dance about Daniel surrendering the belt, so now he's not going to surrender it, but there's still no belt, you know, in circulation, and the other belts that we were discussing are almost kind of more amusing, where they got two Europeans fighting for the U.S. title, and Wade Barrett trying to rise above the mediocrity that he's been mired in for the last few years. So it doesn't speak that well for the WWE titles at this point. You know, hopefully they have some kind of game plan that makes sense. But you know, if Daniel's out of action, which I'm told is likely for however many months, they can't now play, oh, we're going to take the belt away from you card, because they've already kind of nullified it with this Brie being fired. When I don't think anyone's that, you know, shedding tears over Brie being fired anyway, given that she has maybe once one match every 5 months anyway, you know, and in a, you know, a bra and panties charade or something like that. It's not any great, you know, the Diva whole thing is kind of, you know, wishy-washy at best anyway, so. But hopefully they have some game plan that makes sense, you know. But at this point, I'm, you know, it's sort of mixed about that whole thing, you know. I thought they played their roles well, you know. Stephanie played the bitch, you know, reasonably well, went on a bit too long, and Daniel and Brie did their part pretty well, and, you know, I'm sure where I hit from it, though, when Brie's fired, you know, Daniel's still an injured, you know, kind of half-compromised champion, and Stephanie's still the bitch that she's been or whatever, so I don't know. I assume they'll have some kind of follow-up on Raw tomorrow, although quite often they don't deliver the goods the night after either, though, so we'll see what happens.
Hey, Bobby.
Also, I'm still with you. Also, Bruce, another thing that probably can happen storyline-wise with this Daniel Bryan story going on is this also can be used between Brie and Stephanie as another way to further promote the reality show that they have with the Divas. Let's say is just have, like, falling around, like, you know, Brie no longer with the WWE, and, you know, the constant
they could
going
well,
around Daniel Bryan.
Forgive my ignorance or forgive my kind of indifference, but I never watch most of that crap anyway, so I'm not party to some of the other, you know, enlightened dynamics that are evolving on the, you know, the Divas, whatever the hell, you know. But I guess if they're using that to their advantage, they may as well have Brie shedding tears and manifesting her disdain and her whatever for Stephanie. And I don't know that they're savvy enough to, I don't know what they got going on that, but maybe if that served any purpose, they could have Brie and Nikki Bella sobbing and playing that up, you know. But I'm not even sure what's happening with that. I've been hearing all kinds of disconcerting rumors about that whole 24/7 network, whether that's even flying or not, you know. Is that, have you guys got any idea what the latest on that is? Or
on the 24/7 network, are you talking about the WWE network?
Yeah.
I've been hearing reports. All I'm hearing reports is I know Vince McMahon's lost a lot of money, and I know it's coming international soon to England, UK, that area, but I just know that it's not doing as well as they haven't met the quota that they would like. That's really all I know at the time. But a lot of people
like going the way of the XFL and the World Bodybuilding Federation, or what's the?
I wouldn't say it's that bad, but yeah. I can't believe you said that.
It might be worse. I don't know. You know, I've been hearing some pretty sobering. I don't know whether they're true or not, but about some of the financial hemorrhaging and all that stuff, you know. But I don't know. I never, you know, if the 24/7 Wrestling Network is staggering at this point. I don't know where the hell it could be in 6 months. What trump card are they going to pull out that's going to all of a sudden, make anyone want to subscribe or, watch that if they haven't already bought into that right now, They've used all the inducements, like cheap pay-per-views and all the other, I don't know where the hell it would be in 6 months from now, Are they going to bring Hulk Hogan back in X-rated videos or something? I don't know what brilliant schematic they have down the road to, grab the public. Or are they going to take it? I don't know enough about it, I must admit. But is it already international, or is it just in the States and Canada now? Or have they got people in Europe or Japan or Bangladesh buying it or what? I don't know too much about it, but it seems like it might
be.
Hogan
said on SmackDown is coming to the UK. That's the main issue with the network right now. I think once it's released on a global level, it might have a little bit more success. We just one of those wait and see kind of things. All right, that's pretty much it for the majority of the show as far as the filler stuff. This brings us to our last three matches. We had a last man standing match with John Cena and Bray Wyatt, and pretty much like what Tech said when he called in, or was that Tech? No, that wasn't Tech. That's what you said, Bobby, earlier.
That
was you said earlier. I thought going into the show, I thought they might as well improvise and just do I was on the same spectrum as you. I felt like they should have just improvised and just had a six-man tag, last man standing, even though that's never been done before. But I remember that's what people said when they had the six-man TLC match with the Shield team Hell No and Ryback, and that ended up working. I mean, because going in, I figured the Usos were just going to help out John Cena anyway. And this match was okay, but it was just your predictable John Cena last man standing match, really. I knew that by the end of it, John Cena would just do something silly to win. Like, when he had his match with Batista, I always remember when he tied up Batista's foot with duct tape. Cena just does that, So
for me was when they did that, or they had him handcuffed to the post or whatever. And, I think they almost use way too much so-called creative initiative, and they... I would love to see one time they just had a damn finish in the middle, frankly, you'd be refreshed if they just had Bray Wyatt and John Cena beat the crap out of each other for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and finally, maybe have a hot finish, whatever, but somebody wins the match. But, yeah, I'm sort of tired of all the convoluted, contrived horseshit that results in these finishes. Just have them wrestle. I'm getting so weary of not just every pay-per-view, but damn near every match seems to entail going out and busting that timekeeper's table and all of that. And then I'm almost amused when they got why they just happen to have like about 100 chairs and sledgehammers and all this shit under the ring, why is it under there, in the first place? But yeah, I find they have this more is better mindset down there, and they keep going to the well over and over and over with that same old stuff, I think they need to go back to, some perceptible, quasi-conventionality before they, at that point, then deviating means something. But when it's the norm rather than the exception, it's tough to even wrap your head around it after a while. And I just sort of like that tonight, There was so much excess with the other two guys interfering and the Usos and the gimmicks under the ring and the tables and the all and on and on and on. By the end, I was like kind of at a bad smorgasbord, man. Already stuffed my guts and I'm like, no, I can't take any more, you know. And that's where I was from that, you know. I don't know. I maybe have a bit of a slightly cynical, jaded perspective, but it didn't grab me at all, you know. I think they were working hard and trying hard and all the other, but after a while, you know, I was almost kind of like, you know, on a bad roller coaster ride, but let me off this thing, and I've had enough, you know. I don't need any more. I'm about to barf or something like that, you know. But
all right, so the match is... pretty much for the listeners out there, was it started off with Wyatt and Cena, and then as soon as the match began, the Usos came out to even the score, and pretty much I want to say for about maybe 3 to 4 minutes, it was just Cena and Wyatt. You could tell automatically right from the get-go the match was going to be convoluted, because like right from the beginning, Cena was already doing his trademark five moves of doom. I remember like by the 3 minute mark, he was already doing the shoulder tackle and the you can't see me and stuff. So eventually Eric Rowan comes in the ring, starts beating up Cena, and then the Usos get in there, and so the Usos and the Wyatt family, they start brawling.
Yeah, it was funny how that even happened, you know, like all of a sudden, you know, there's not even any pretext, they just in the ring, you know, and not just for a quick run in or a swerve, they were like in there for, you know, extended periods, and that they make the refs look like complete morons too, because they're just, you know, not doing anything about it, you know. And I don't even know what the hell the rules are, you know. And I'm not a big fan of these, you know, anything goes at rule, you know. Because by that token, somebody may as well just bring a gun out to the ring or a sledgehammer, which I might add did in the other match, but. Yeah, when you have those kind of things, you know, the whole thing ceases to even be wrestling. You know, you may as well bring chainsaws and sledgehammers and swords and switchblades and bullshit out there, you know. And, you know, it ceases to be wrestling, you know, too, at that point. You know, it's just supposed to be what it is. So, but yeah, I agree. I think there was... it wasn't enough wrestling to set up whatever the hell else, you know. And for me, there was no ebb and flow. A good match has kind of back and forth, you know, and the heel gets heat and the face makes the hot comeback and all like that. And I didn't see any real ebb and flow in that match. It was just sort of like you said, the usual Cena signature stuff. And it didn't really... have you on the edge of your seat or anything, you know. It certainly didn't have me on the edge of mine. And it's like, by the end, I was like, you know, I didn't even know why the hell those props were, you know, out there. You know, it just happened to be something that Cena could put Bray through that looked like a minor of the old coffin match with Undertaker and Yokozuna, however many years ago, you know. It seemed to conveniently just be there that Bray Wyatt got put through it, and then happened to be another big prop there. I'm not sure why it was there either, you know. That just was conveniently in place for Cena to put on top of the coffin or whatever. And like, you know, I don't know what the point of the whole thing was, you know. Cena outwitted Bray Wyatt again, but I'm sure there'll be some spin-off tomorrow or something that, you know, hopefully it's not as contrived as what I saw tonight, but.
Alrighty. So, yeah, basically John Cena wins, and, you know, Cena wins. LOL meme, moving on. All right, our next match was the Divas match, Paige against Alicia Fox. Paige wins by submission. And, you know, even though I don't really care much for the Divas division, this is one of the reasons why fans don't care. They do this so many times. They have the Divas matches later in the card after an emotionally exhaustive match. And wrestling fans, well, not wrestling fans, it's really hard to care and get into a women's match after you just watched a very long last man standing match. I mean, they did it at WrestleMania. I mean, no one gave a fuck about that 14 diva match because fans were still traumatized over the Undertaker's streak losing, ending, that is. You know, they do this a lot of times with the divas. They just, they always had the divas go out there. And I remember I'm a big fan of Trish Stratus, and Trish Stratus was on some show. I forgot what show it was. This is a long time ago. They asked someone's, I don't remember. I think she was like on the Law Live Audio Wrestling. I'm not exactly sure, but they asked Trish Stratus, you know, what was the most difficult thing she's ever had to do. And I believe it was WrestleMania 18. I think she had to follow the Rock Hogan match. I'm not sure if she was exactly after that match. I do remember Trish was at WrestleMania 18. If my memory is correct, it may have been Trish, Victoria, and some other person. Someone Google that. I'm not sure. But I believe she had a match after Rock Hogan, and she said, like, it was very difficult to follow that because the fans were just, you know, exhausted, you know, because Rock Hogan was a dream match. WWE, they've been doing this with divas for some time. You know, they just up there, you know?
Oh, yeah, and I think, you know, what you say, taking it one step farther, I think, you know, the main event or whatever, the match that you're seeking to get the maximum amount of reaction from should always be the last match. I've never been able to fathom this rationale, and I see it in WWE, where all too often they have the main event midway through the card, and then you you don't go to a damn concert and see, you'd say, the Rolling Stones, and then after you have some warm-up band come out after, and that's kind of what the divas come across as, you know, no offense to the divas, but you know, they're sort of like the, you know, the cartoon or the short or whatever before the main feature, whatever the hell. And it's a disservice to them, too. You know, I don't know what the point of that whole thing is. You know, they've already done enough to, you know, kind of take away from the credibility with all the other nonsense they've done with the Divas matches and you know, I'm not sure if we're supposed to take them seriously or they're just supposed to be a bit of eye candy or whether they're, you know, maybe for some of the, you know, degenerates out there who want to watch tits and ass and stuff. But it doesn't seem to be any, you know, real rhyme or reason. And all too often, the more is better mindset seems to be prevalent with WWE. You know, sometimes they have too much, and I think that's a common mistake on say, WrestleMania. They have way too much to the point where, you know, matches that maybe could generate some interest on a lesser pay-per-view or something else, you know, are almost lost in the shuffle on WrestleMania. And I thought the Divas were sort of like, about like that tonight, you know. They, you know, it didn't serve any great purpose coming in after the Wyatt Cena thing and was sort of sandwiched between that and the other Evolution Shield thing, you know. So it didn't do them any favors, you know, having to kind of be stuck between the other, you know, the last two matches. And that said, I thought it was a decent, you know, not a bad match as Divas matches go. You know, Divas don't do that much wrestling anymore. You know, they've almost become stereotyped as, you know, one-trick ponies. And, you know, very rarely do I see any wrestling to hold together all the other horseshit. But by that token, I still thought it was not bad. You know, the was about as good as you could expect given what they had to work with, and like we were talking before, sandwiched between the two main events, you know. Frankly, if it was up to me, I probably would have had that match maybe the opener of the card or something like that, maybe following the you know, the other prequel that we were talking about with Hornswoggle and the El Burrito or whatever the hell. Yeah, that match would have maybe been.
I would have had the Divas match where the Big E Rusev match was, and I would have had Rusev and Big E be in the middle of the last man standing Shield thing, because they were content with having Big E and Rusev going like 3 minutes anyway. That's what I would have done, because you know I don't care about the Divas
division.
Frankly,
taken some of those other matches off. You know, I don't think they even needed them. You know, they. I think it's almost better, frankly, to have maybe. I think WWE in general needs to maybe go back to where you got five good matches instead of five good matches and four crappy matches. You know, more is not better. But yeah, if the Divas hadn't been on, if somebody had come out and said, okay, you know, got too much, or you know. I don't think anyone would have given a rat's ass if they had been taken off the card, and you know, wouldn't have mattered whatsoever. But
well, Bruce, I think it's really leans to the fact that the WWE has never really held women's wrestling in high regards anyway, and I think it's really gotten to the point today where they really just use the Divas matches as a chance for the audience in attendance to go relieve themselves in the bathroom or go get more refreshments at the concession stand before they sell.
Yeah,
it's
sort of eye candy or sexploitation. I think if they're going to use divas, I think they first off need to get some divas who can work, who actually, and the other side of it, I think they actually need to have a few, you know, it's all well and good to have all the divas hot looking, but it actually offset them better if they had a few big, ugly monsters. Like, I know when I was in Japan years back, they used to have these big, you know, ugly fat bitches like Dump Matsumoto and Bull Nakano and some of those big, ugly, you know, monsters. It, you know, there was some kind of interest then where you had the, you know, the big, ugly monster abusing the poor little, you know, baby face. And I'm not sure why they don't do that, you know. Before, you'd get far better heat having some big monster like Awesome Kong or one of those big, you know, Ronda Singh types or whatever, destroying and laying waste to these, you know, aesthetically pleasing little divas or whatever, you know. I'm not sure why they can't figure that out. You know, imagine if you had all the guys and they're all looking like Chip and Dale dancers, and there's not any big ugly monsters and thugs and all like that. You know, at some point somebody would say, "Oh, we need some big fat slob, or we need some big ugly bullies and all like that." So I don't know why they don't do that with the divas. You know, yeah, it won't be. You know, just be old school, you know, but I don't know. But I think we've expended enough time dissertating on the Divas anyway. They don't warrant any more of our
spent
thoughts.
More time speaking on the Divas match than the length that the actual match was.
Oh, about 10 times more, you know. Not sure if that, what the implications of that are, but... And that leads us to our penultimate main event and drum roll, and I'll let you guys introduce it.
All right, so this takes us to our main event match, the no-holds-barred six-man elimination tag team match, The Shield against Evolution. This match was a little different from their Extreme Rules match. Because it's a no-holds-barred match from the very beginning, I just expected it to just be batshit crazy. So when the match first starts off, they decide to go that route. Then after about 5 minutes of brawling, they kind of go to traditional tag team match rules, which kind of confused some fans because typically in no-holds-barred, you don't follow regular rules anyway. Then after about, I want to say, 15 minutes of regular tag team action was when they decide to just kind of revert it back to a no-holds-barred match again. And it was mostly them brawling in separate spots. Like, for instance, say, Roman Reigns and Batista would be outside in the ring, and Seth Rollins and Randy Orton would be near the entryway, and the other two guys would be, like, near the announce position. So they were brawling in different portions, keeping them separated. It was a lot more slower-paced and more methodical than the Extreme Rules match, and it was basically Triple H sort of systematically trying to pick apart the Shield one by one. There were many spots in the match where they could have believably pinned a member of the Shield, but rather than do that, they wanted to do more punishment. For instance, there was a spot where Triple H gave Seth Rollins the pedigree on a steel chair, and Dean Ambrose had just gotten beaten up by the Evolution, so it was just Roman Reigns just sort of getting his ass handed to him by Evolution for about 5 minutes. They took off his ring gear, they got some kendo sticks and sort of beat him up old school style, and just sort of, I think the story they were trying to tell was, we can end you at any time, but rather than end you and put you out your misery, we're going to prolong your suffering, which is the story they were trying to tell. And eventually the turnaround comes when after they beat up Rollins, they kind of go back to where Ambrose and Rollins were, but Rollins was already like at the top of the Titantron screen, and he jumped just like he did off Extreme Rules, and it was a big spot, fans were going crazy and stuff like that. And eventually the Shield is able to come back. Roman Reigns, he hits Batista with a spear, eliminating him, and then Dean Ambrose, he hits his little impaler DDT on Randy Orton, eliminating him. But even though Orton and Batista were eliminated, they still stayed at the ringside and assisted Triple H. Batista speared Reigns, and Orton gave Triple H a sledgehammer, and Triple H hit Dean Ambrose with it and stuff. But then eventually Reigns hits Triple H with a spear. And so the Shield, they get a clean sweep, 3-0. No members of the Shield were eliminated. But this match went for a very, very long time. There were no eliminations to the very end. This match probably went... I used to time matches, but I hate time matches when I'm watching them live, because if I time them while I'm watching it live, I can't enjoy it as much. I feel like I'm being forced. So generally what I do is I watch it live, and then when I watch the replay later, then I time it. But this match went quite a while. I want to say at least 20 minutes, and then that's when the eliminations came. And so the Shield, they beat Evolution. So I'm assuming this will probably be the end of it. I mean, maybe they might do Triple H versus Roman Reigns later down the road. I don't really see the point, seeing as how we've already seen it indirectly twice in tag matches. But the Shield won, convincingly. They came back, and it was a good match. Again, it was different, though. It was very different from the Extreme Rules match. The Extreme Rules match was just sort of a brawl. You know, it was different, and it was a spot fest. It was entertaining. This one was slower paced. It was more methodical, and it kind of had that old school NWA Four Horsemen sort of thing, where they were just sort of trying to theoretically take them down one member at a time. But in the end, it ended up costing them, because the Evolution did not eliminate. They were beating up the Shield, but they did not eliminate them. So they might tell that story later on. So Batista, he's going to be gone for a while. He's going to be shooting his movie, The Rise of the Guardians thing, and I don't know what Orton's going to do, and who knows what Triple H is going to do, but I think this is pretty much for now, at least maybe for the next 2-3 months. This is probably going to be the end of the feud. I thought the match was okay. It was the best choice to main event the show, and it sent the fans' homes happy, and there you go. So, hey, Bobby, you've been quiet for most of the show. Let's get your opinion. What did you think about this match, Bobby?
I thought it was an all right match. There were some things that were questionable, starting first with Batista's choice of attire for the match. It didn't really make too much sense. I mean, at least have the same color trunks as your teammates. But, yeah, it was mostly a brawling match. Other things, it just, like, selling points didn't make sense. Like, you know, they had Triple H and Batista beating up on Dean Ambrose. Like, I remember, like, they... clothesline smashed his head to the ground, kneed his head, and all punched him on the ground, and they get him into the corner, and then he does a somersault to the other side of the ring and tags in his partner. And maybe Bruce would like to talk more about that. Also, the high spot with Seth Rollins, they never even showed how he got up there. It's like he miraculously appeared on top of the stage.
Yeah, they should have had some kind of, I would have thought, some, you know, big drum and roll, or make a production if he's going to go all the way up there. It seemed to almost be kind of not even perceived to be of any great consequence. You know, something was sort of missing on that. And, yeah, I thought the match was all right. I assume it means the end of Evolution because they were pretty well beaten in the middle. I was sort of mixed. I thought Triple H did some phenomenal bumps. He did some really good stuff out there. I thought he was, you know, possibly the best, you know, guy on the heel side. But I'm still kind of like, I can't stand that nonsense where they have the sledgehammer. I think that's, like, anytime you actually hit a guy in the head with the sledgehammer, you'll probably kill him, you know, so it's an insult, you know. So I couldn't figure that out because he did hit, something was Ambrose with the sledgehammer or something like that. And a few minutes later, he is up, you know, pinning somebody again, you know. So, but yeah, I think the thing that I took away from it is, you know, I guess it's good to send the people home happy once in a while. That's cool, you know. Right now, there was no real. That was the thing that stuck in my mind at the end of it all. There was no real burning issues that the Shield beat Evolution. There was nothing really coming out of that. Nobody's saying, look, I need to see Randy and Ambrose, or I need to see Triple H fighting Roman Reigns or something. There was nothing really from that. And with Daniel Bryan out and Cena pretty much, you know, that whole thing pretty much run its course too. I'm not sure what the big enchilada down the road is. You know, what we're supposed to be like, whoa, I got to see this guy and that guy, you know, maybe Davy Crockett and, you know, Hornswoggle or something like that, you know. Where's the Funkasaurus when we need him? Or is Prince Albert still, can we, Tenzai, can we bring him back for, you know, something like that? So I'm not sure where, you know, most times I come away from a pay-per-view like there's some big burning issue or there's something like, whoa, I got to, you know, look forward to that one, you know, but right now it seems like Randy's pretty much neutralized. Batista, obviously. I didn't get any great vibe that Triple H is coming back, you know. Yeah, I don't know where, what the big, you know, angle of storyline for the summer is coming up. You know, I didn't pick up on anything that was like, whoa, I'm looking forward to that, you know, or it seems like things are a little bit, you know, in the, I guess, developmental stage right now, but you should always be kind of leaving some kind of hot burning issue. And I guess the hottest burning issue today was the Brie Bella getting fired or whatever the hell, but didn't really leave me clamoring for anything either, though, I can't say, you know. So what did you guys think?
I thought the match was okay. I enjoyed their Extreme Rules match more, but this one did its job. I just hope this is the end of it, and hopefully you can just
maybe
take a break.
Maybe that's merciful, you know. Maybe that's good to clean, you know, cut it off though after birth or whatever, you know, and let it finish at that level, you know. But
yeah, overall I thought this show was okay. I thought it was average. It had too much filler for my taste. Times it felt like I was watching Raw or Special. It felt like I was watching an extension of Raw or maybe a special edition of SmackDown. I mean, the show was okay, but definitely nothing of real importance or anything.
Yeah,
of like must.
I'm not sure if
anything
it justifies you paying pay-per-view price to see it, you know. It's like, I think that's a good way of putting it. It was sort of like a slightly enhanced version of Raw. That's, you know, pretty well put description. But, you know, by that token, you know, it's like I'm not sure if it is enough to make me feel like, whoa, I was intrigued that they have another pay-per-view at the end of June. I don't even know what that one is. I saw they were hyping it.
Right, the next pay-per-view is going to be Money in the Bank. And what's interesting about this pay-per-view is in the past, we always had two Money in the Bank matches, but since the world titles are now unified, there's now only going to be one. So we got to see.
It seems almost kind of, yeah, it almost seems like a contradiction, or, you know, surely they must have thought of this, but we got Daniel Bryan not even in action yet. He's got the belt, so the other belts I don't think mean fuck all at this point. You know, it's two Europeans vying for the Euro, U.S. title, and then Wade Barrett. Wade Barrett was kind of tepid reaction as the Intercontinental. So I don't know what, you know, unless they got something a lot hotter than I've been given to believe. Nothing that really you're like, whoa, I got to see that. You know. So it'd be interesting to see how they fan the flames or conjure up whatever storylines, you know, that are going to make me really like, whoa, I got to see that climbing the ladder to get that golden holy grail or whatever the hell, you know. But I don't even know. Maybe there's something I'm missing in the translation here, but.
Yeah, that's pretty much everything. It was an honor talking to you tonight, Bruce. Thanks for calling in, Bobby. And pretty much, I don't really have anything else to say. We went over everything tonight. Do you guys have anything other to add before we call it a night?
Not really. I'd like to thank you. You did a great job tonight, kind of keeping the dialogue rolling and adding perspectives. And I enjoyed your insights and. Yeah, and all things considered, like you said, I thought the pay-per-view was wasn't bad. It was, I'd seen a lot worse. So, but yeah, that's about it. I don't have anything other to say. I think we'll be back next week. You know, and maybe discussing some of the. Whatever the hell transpires this week on Raw and SmackDown and whatever else, I guess. So I'll look forward to that.
All right. It was nice talking to you guys. You guys have a good week.
Likewise. Going to the dogs here, so take care. Yeah, bye.